The Museum of Native American History in Bentonville is hosting its fifth annual Native American Cultural Celebration, October 7th through the 9th. The three-day celebration of Indigenuity will feature conversations with artists, authors, and astronauts. We're joined now by Jose Hernandez, a former migrant worker turned astronaut who will participate in a virtual event Saturday. Thank you so much for speaking with us today.
So I understand your path to becoming an astronaut started by being inspired by the Apollo 17 mission. Do you remember the feeling you had watching that while holding rabbit ear antennas?
Oh, absolutely. It was a December in 1972, cool, crisp December evening. And I just remember that, you know, the Apollo era was the amazing era because you saw it at school. This was my first time I saw it on TV live, but at school, they would talk about it. The teachers would talk about it. The fact that we were sending man to the moon. And it was such a big deal. They would televise. I never watched it until this last mission, but they would televise the launches, the moonwalks, and then the splashdowns on TV live. And all of the United States, the whole world for that matter, would stop in amazement to watch. This is such a big deal. And the Hernandez family was no different, except that we had an old, big old hunkin' console TV, black and white vacuum tube technology. You know, we couldn't afford cable, so we had the next best thing, rabbit ear antennas to improve reception. And as a matter of fact, when something important came on like this, my dad would send the youngest one, me, to go and adjust the antenna. And lots of times when I would let go of the antenna, the picture would get worse. So I would, my dad would tell me, stay there. So, and this is why I think I became an astronaut, because I, for that evening, when I watched Apollo 17 moonwalk, I held that antenna for a good 15, 20 minutes. And I think through osmosis, you know, signals kind of. So as soon as the family had their fill, they would let me let go. And here I was sitting in front of the, if you can picture a 10-year-old kid sitting in front of a fuzzy black and white TV, watching astronaut Gene Cernan walk on the moon. And then I would go outside and see the moon almost full. Then I would come back inside, sit down, hear the reporter, still remember the reporter's name, Walter Cronkite, narrating that moonwalk. And I was just mesmerized. I said, I remember telling myself, this is what I want to be. I want to be an astronaut. So from 10 years old on, I knew I wanted to be an astronaut.
Becoming an astronaut is actually a lot of work. There's like a lot of schooling. There's a lot of training. There's a lot of like certifications and things that you need to do. And it actually took you 12 times to get NASA to enroll you or accept you. So why were you so persistent? I mean, I think it's human nature after a couple of tries to be like, okay, well, this is not for me, you know, and because of how much work it is, why did you keep going? Why did you keep trying?
Well, that's a good question, Antoinette. I think the reason why I kept going was my plan B was built into my plan A, because the mere fact I wanted to be an astronaut motivated me to get my engineering degree. It motivated me to go to graduate school. It motivated me to get a job at a premier research laboratory, Lawrence Livermore National Lab. And then after being rejected so many times, I figured I gotta be doing other things besides that. That wasn't good enough because the competition was such that 10,000 people met the requirements just like I did to become an astronaut, and they were all applying. And so I figured I gotta do different things. And so me wanting to be an astronaut motivated me also to become a pilot, because I compared myself with the people that got selected. They were all pilots. So I became a pilot. It also motivated me to become scuba diver rated, because I noticed everybody that was getting selected were rated in scuba diving. I wasn't. So I invested in myself and I did all these things. And it was also helping my career advance at the lab. So I was having a very, very successful career at Lawrence Livermore National Lab. And each year I would console myself by, when I didn't get selected, I said, hey, what's the worst that could happen if I never get selected? I said, dude, I'm working at a national lab as a scientist. I learn how to fly. I learn how to scuba dive. And I got this great career. I said, this is not a, for a migrant farm worker, I said, this is not a bad consolation prize. So I was always, you know, picking myself up and motivating myself and say, hey, as long as NASA doesn't tell me, don't send any more applications, I'm just going to keep sending them because I'm living my life. I'm going about my life and I'm not changing a thing. I wouldn't change a thing if I was applying or if I wasn't applying. So I said, if it happens, it's going to be great. If it doesn't happen, you know, I'm blessed to have what I have right now.
So when you finally got up into space, was the view worth it?
Oh, tonight it was, I'll tell you, it was worth it. You know, words don't do it justice, at least words coming from a geeky scientist like me, which is why it's so great that private industry is getting involved in sending people that are non-traditional, non-scientists, non-pilots, but, you know, actual poets, actual writers, actual actors, you know, they're going to be able to come back and more effectively give their orbital perspective, kind of like what we do, but do it more gracefully and more effectively to the masses.
So you got to have your astronaut career and then you retired and you started the Reaching the Stars Foundation. So how are you using that to give back to young students?
We actually started Reaching for the Stars Foundation, the Jose Hernandez Reaching for the Stars Foundation, in my hometown of Stockton, because when I got selected, I would come once a year to give a talk and excitement would build up. And then after I leave, the excitement sort of went dwindled down. And so my friends here in the community said, hey, we got to do something to keep the excitement up. And so we all came up with the idea of saying, why don't we create a foundation where we preach the good gospel of STEM or STEAM now, education, and expose these kids that have the similar upbringing that I did in terms of migrant farm working, expose them to careers in STEM and STEAM. We started that in 2006, and we have a summer academy, 7th to 12th graders that go to a university. They're exposed to a university 5 weeks during the summer. They study next year's math and science curriculum, so they're ahead of the game. We have a one-day exploratorium. We call it Science Blast, where we invite more than 1,000 kids from the school districts and expose them to on hands-on applications to kind of like exploratorium experience. And why the fifth grade? Well, fifth graders are 10-year-olds. That's the age I decided I want to be an astronaut. So I figured if it was good enough for me exposing myself to Gene Cernan walking on the moon, maybe if we expose kids to STEM careers, to people that look like them that are in STEM careers, STEAM careers, if we do that, then maybe they can start thinking about what they're going to be doing in the future.
So through the foundation, you're helping inspire kids in your community, but have you been able to pass your love of space onto family or friends that are closer to you?
My oldest has a bachelor's, 2 master's, and is finishing up his PhD in aerospace engineering at Purdue. And I remember when he was first going for his PhD, I asked him why Purdue? And he said he made a list of all the astronauts NASA has ever selected and what schools they graduated from. And Purdue has produced the most astronauts. So he said, that's where I'm going. So they go figure. That's how he told me he wanted to be an astronaut. So so I told him, hey, the best advice I can give you is read my book, Reaching for the Stars.
So how do you feel about potentially having another astronaut in the family?
You know, chances are he won't. And I've told him, I said, look, chances are it won't happen. But the mere fact that you want to, here you are doing your PhD. You know, it's the same thing that happened to me. I said, your plan B is built in and you're going to land on your feet first, wherever you end up, son. I said, and that's what I told him. I said, as long as you're not just one track mind of wanting to be an astronaut and that's all you want to be, as long as you're not like that, you have to enjoy the journey, I tell them. I says, you have to enjoy the journey because it might not happen. You may not get there. So as long as you're okay doing what you're doing, then that's the right path for you.
Your story is able to reach a lot of people through your book, but now you're going to get an even wider audience thanks to Netflix, who I understand is working on a film about your life. How much involvement do you have with the film and when does it come out?
I have quite a bit of involvement. We're up to our fifth editing of the script. They've already selected a director. she works closely with me. I really appreciate the fact that she asks for comments and she takes my comments into account when reviewing the script. They also have already booked the actor that's going to play me. Michael Pena is going to be playing me. So he's a great actor. I've talked to him already. So we're pretty excited. Filming starts in March of this coming year. So we expect it to drop on the Netflix platform probably at the end of 2022 or the beginning of 2023.
So throughout this whole journey for you, it's so exciting because you've made that dream come true for you. But have you ever given any thought to what it means to share your story with other people? Have you thought about the importance of representation? From what little research I did, I couldn't find a lot of Hispanic astronauts in NASA's history. And I don't know how many of those have a story similar to yours, that they started, you know, working the fields with their family at a young age in California to grow up to have all these, you know, engineering degrees and go to space. So what is the importance of being able to tell your story so that other people can see themselves in you in a way?
It's very important, Antoinette. I'll tell you, there are other Hispanic astronauts, but I can unequivocally tell you that I'm the first generation Mexican-American astronaut, or the first one that comes from immigrant parents, the first one that's came from working in agriculture, in picking fruits and vegetables, certainly, and the first one there. But there are others like Daniel Olivas from El Paso, Dr. Ellen Ochoa, but they're all third, fourth generation and are role models in their own right. But I'll tell you, I wanted to be an astronaut purely out of egotistical reasons, because I wanted to be an astronaut. I want to go to space. I wanted to be like Gene Cernan there, who I saw him walking on the moon. Never did it cross my mind that I was going to become an instant role model. And I'll tell you that hit me when they made the announcement of the class in 2004, that all the attention I got from the media made me realize that, you know, I was a role model. And luckily for me, I've always been involved in extracurricular activities at work, in minority engineering associations, and trying to create a even playing field for everybody in workplaces. And so I realized that, and all of a sudden I felt like I had a superpower, kind of like I could use for good. And so that's when I said, you know, I can go out and preach the good gospel of STEM education and what it can lead to. And more importantly, I can go into the communities where people look like me, and people perhaps have the same social economic upbringing that I did. And in doing so, you know, I want to create this empowering effect that says, look, I'm not an Einstein. I'm not genius. I'm just a hard worker. And if you work hard and if you get an education, you too can reach for the stars. There's nothing special about me. I'm just like you. And it's very important that the kids see that and understand that, and especially coming from someone that looks like them. And so that's when I said, hey, I'm going to embrace this superpower and try to use it for good.
Well, congratulations on reaching your goals and continuing to give back to the community in that way. I have so enjoyed getting to meet you and talk to you today. Thank you so much for your time.
No problem, Antoinette. Hey, thank you very much.